name's Josh Snyder, and you're listening to Thoughtful Discussions, and I'm here with Scott Kowalski. Tell me a little about yourself.
I'm a local abstract artist in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Currently, I'm pretty much, that's a big part of my income. It's a big part of my life. That's a little bit about myself.
Okay. And you have other projects that you do. You have the Undie Ride.
I do have the Underwear Ride. I do a lot of volunteering.
Yes. Yeah. And what else do you volunteer with?
I help run my the Enright Community Garden.
Okay.
That's important to me. I do the Underwear Ride, which actually this past week I kind of said goodbye, but I'm really not going to say goodbye. I'm going to.
So did you start that?
No, my friend Virginia did.
Okay. Are they still doing it?
No.
Okay.
She ran it from 2012 to 2016.
Gotcha.
And then I got a hold of it in 2016. I've been trying to kind of shuffle it into a larger group of people.
Yeah.
So one person runs it, or one person leads each ride throughout the season.
Got it.
Share the wealth, share the understanding of how it's done, just in case something happened to me. And,
sure.
You know, and it's a big.
Or you ever need to pass the torch.
Right. And so officially.
So the torch was passed to you, and then now you're trying to kind of spread that out.
Yeah. Okay. I quote unquote passed it this year. Like we are filled as far as people, but if they come to me next year, I'm going to help them out starting out. And then if it's just hey, we can't find anybody to lead a particular ride.
Yeah.
You know, I'll do it. So.
Got you. And there's have you ever done the, there's a beer bike thing?
Oh, the beer keg ride. I've done the keg ride.
Okay.
Both ways.
Yeah.
What's the other, there's.
And that's East End Brewing. They take a keg, for the people that are listening. How does that work? When I first moved to Pittsburgh, I was biking all the time, and so I was interested in all these things, but I didn't get to do a lot of them. But I kind of know a little bit about it, but I don't know a ton.
They're basically, they take a full keg to OTB, and then they take the empty keg back to the East End Brewery.
Got you.
Pretty sure. Yeah, that's how it's.
That's and that's it. In the south side?
Yeah.
OTB
on the south side. Yeah.
Gotcha. And then back to Lincoln Larmor area.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And it, I think it grabs like 200 or 300 people. There's a lot of people. It's been a minute since I've been on it.
That's cool.
I don't drink, so.
Yeah, me neither. I'll do a special occasion type thing, but I'm not that's why I'm a big proponent for Liquid Death, because it looks like you're holding a beer, but it's just water. Crossing my fingers, I'm working on maybe getting some canned water that we can rebrand. So
nice. All right.
That'll be working with another local brewery, and we'll be potentially buying a pallet of unlabeled cans of water, and then we can brand them however we want. So
nice.
That could be a cool, fun thing for the print shop. Check out pghprintship.com.
I think that more bars should start.
I talked to three so far just about this, and one of them already has it in their thing, but the other two were like, you know what, that's a good idea. And I'm like, the customers are limitless. If someone's in your tap room and they you kind of feel goofy when you have to go over to the igloo and you fill up the paper cup or whatever, however they have it set up, they make you feel kind of like a jerk for not drinking a beer.
Right, right.
And if you could have a 16-ounce can with a cool label that says water, the first night I ever had a Liquid Death, I was at Spirit and I had three of them, and I tweeted them the next day. I said, I've never drank so much water in my life. I feel, the next morning, I felt amazing.
That's, you know what, and just, you know, it's also kind of a drag to go up and you're like, we've got Coke products, so I have to get a Sprite
every time.
Even though I think that they, most of the time they give it to me for free, and then
slip that tip. especially if you're there with people and you're the one driving, they know, you know, they see your friends having a good time, and you're like, I think most bars are pretty thankful for coming out and hanging out with your friends, and you're not,
not partying.
Whether or not that's actually the case or not, it's important to have people from a variety of people when you're out somewhere. So I understand that. So tell me more about we were talking about the current right now.
Right, right.
So volunteering.
Yeah.
And with your art, So you're an abstract artist.
I'm an abstract artist.
Yes. Yep. And you ship
worldwide. Yeah. The Great. Furthest I've gone is mm-hmm. Hawaii.
Okay.
Yeah.
Somewhere. But you've gone to other countries as well.
Canada.
Okay.
I haven't gone to Europe yet, but yeah.
Europe, hit us up. What's your website?
ScottKowalski.com.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit about your past and kind of what brought you into your art career.
Honestly, so I grew up in Altoona, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
I was lucky. My parents were like, hey, he likes to draw. Mm-hmm. So from a young age, I was drawing and I took a couple of classes, like independent classes.
Cool.
My first real piece, I think, was I did a drawing of like Led Zeppelin. I was like,
nice.
I became like 6th, 7th grade. I became fascinated with Led Zeppelin. So like I did this drawing, and it was like an illustration kind of deal with like the hermit holding the thing and the Icarus and all that jazz. And then they sent me to classes, like official classes, like with this woman that taught watercolor.
Cool.
And I started about watercolors, and that's where I really started. And first, do you know who Frank Fazetta is?
Not a fan, no.
He's like a fantasy illustrator. One of his famous things is the Death Dealer.
Got you.
So Molly Hatchet, I did the cover of Molly Hatchet, which had the Death Dealer on it with the big helmet and horns, and like the horse was breathing fire, and I did it in watercolors.
Got you.
And then it just kind of went from there. I did 3 years there, like as a teenager, and then I moved to Pittsburgh and went to the Art Institute, which, you know, if you're not gonna be an artist, you go to the Art Institute and you become something else creative wise and so on and so forth. Because everybody's like, no, you don't want to be an artist because you're gonna be poor and you're gonna be this and you're gonna be that and it's a hard life and all this other jazz. So went to the Art Institute and became a designer. And I just all through my life I've been a creative, so it doesn't matter what I touch.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's with wood or whether it's with Play-Doh or whether it's with crayons, it doesn't matter. It's kind of just like, hey, I'm being creative in this process, and it's so that's kind of how my life has been. I've always painted. Mm-hmm. But over the past, I would say like 2012, I put a piece in Art All Night.
Nice.
And I sold the piece.
Yeah.
And I was selling pieces before that, but that like really gave me like, it gave me a kick that I needed, and the confidence that I needed, that like a random person that I don't know, that didn't know me at all, bought a piece of my work.
Cool.
And from there, the idea was, wow, okay, now how do I make this into where I am today?
Now, what were you doing for work at that time? Just curious.
Still graphic design.
Okay.
So most of my career, been 30 years for me, has been graphic design, web development. I got in, at one point I was actually like a semi-serious like PHP coder.
Yeah.
Which is horrible. and my brain hated every minute of it.
Yeah.
But
you were trying to problem solve at the time.
Definitely problem solve. Also to fill a niche that needed to be like work-wise. I mean, I started web development in 1994.
Gotcha.
So.
Yeah.
I was excited to put a blinking like text on a web page.
And
it came up on like a number. 12 baud modem, which people don't even know what modem is.
No, not at all. So. I remember that though. I remember when we upgraded to a 28.8 and then a 56K, and we were like, oh my goodness, and we got AOL, and we were like, let's go.
Yeah, 56K was like, holy shit. And then you had to like ISDN, or did you go to T1s? And
we got T1 eventually. We got it.
The businesses could only afford the T1s, and it was just wild. That was It was amazing, you know, creatively. I mean, it filled a niche because it was critical thinking, it was problem solving, it was an expression because it was such a new thing that every year, and it was also a frustrating thing, but like every year it changed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as a developer, as a coder, as a designer, it was just like, holy crap, you know, I've got to keep learning and evolving with this process. So it took up a good bit of my creative energy, you know, because it was like when I was younger, it was like, you know, I'd spend 14-hour days just building websites and designing, and it was, you know, it was a challenge.
Yeah.
And that's not, I mean, once you have a direction, it's easy to build out.
Yeah.
Getting the information from the customer is probably one of the biggest hangups that I've seen. But the design aspect is also, I mean, it's tough because you might spend a week or two working on a design of something and then it doesn't work out and you have to start over. Depending on what project it is, you want it to look good and you want to build it right so that it can be, you know, used. I've done my website and I make changes to it probably every day. And
it's tough because I think that a lot, like I dealt with a lot of small business owners and small business owners wear a lot of hats. And
absolutely.
Unfortunately, sometimes they try to wear a design hat.
Yeah.
And they're not designers.
Or they allow like five people to discuss the options and then you end up with this, you know, camel-like.
Yeah, it's like, why did you pick green? Green, no.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be a committee every time.
And
the other, pick one person to make decisions. let them pioneer that.
Yes, and shout out to all the designers out there. Like, you're going to understand this next part. They degrade the design.
Oh, yeah.
They just pull it down to its lowest common denominator, and all designers are like, that's just... Let's design the shit out of this. Let's you know, minimalist stuff. We're gonna do artsy. We're gonna do fartsy. We're gonna do, you know, we're gonna make it people think. And then the reality of it is that no, it needs to be like Helvetica. It needs to be a simple picture with one color, and like that's what it is.
Yeah.
And try to fit as much content in this small square space as you can.
Right. It's funny.
Yeah. I had wild aspirations that I was gonna like design album covers for a living and stuff when I'm coming out of the Art Institute, and it's like I did design album covers. I will say I did design album covers, but that wasn't the reality of it. You know, you're doing Depends, you're doing like Perfume or whatever, just, you know, local stuff. But anyway. So
got you. One thing we didn't touch on, going back to like the current, so. And the reason I bring it up is you mentioned it as the first place that you sold a piece of art, Art All Night.
Yeah.
And now, what's your involvement with Art All Night? And how long? So that was 13 years ago.
Yeah.
And how has that changed? So you were in it 13 years ago, and then I'm guessing consistently in it. And then
consistently in it.
When did you start to be involved in it?
In 2019.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, 2018, because I made a decision. Like, I'm like, I don't really know how to get involved, and it's a pretty loose organization. It's not.
Yeah,
it's
they
not,
just need volunteers for yeah. one. Like, it's just, and I haven't been able to do it, but I'm hoping maybe when my son gets a little bit older, I'll have some
we could easily use you. Yes,
I appreciate it.
But I went down and I helped tear down a little bit. Like, they're just like, hey, pick up this piece of plywood and take it over here.
Yeah,
and then I'm like. I used to be the president of Freeride.
Okay.
I used to be really...
Real quick, what is that?
Freeride is a bicycle collective in Pittsburgh. It's over in Homewood...
Construction Junction?
Point Breeze, yeah. Construction Junction. It's right in Construction Junction.
Yeah.
And I used to be heavily involved in that. And I wanted to step away, let new people come in. And
that, what do? They help fix bikes and give away bikes?
They upcycle bicycles.
Okay.
So people donate bicycles and they either repair them or teach people to repair them. Mm. You can buy them for an inexpensive price to almost, you can actually volunteer and use your volunteer hours to purchase a bike. So
it's amazing.
There's no real barrier to purchasing a bike. Mm. So like I said, I was really involved in that. And then I'm like, I'm going to step away.
Yeah.
it consumes a lot of your time, especially if you're involved in the mechanizations of
Correct.
It and all that jazz.
Yes.
And I'm like, you know what? I'll go to Art All Night. I'll go to their first meeting. I'm just going to shut up and I'm going to sit down and I'm going to just listen to what they're saying. And one of the,
how did that work out?
Within 10, I have a sickness. And within 10 minutes, the lady's like, her name's Jen. She was the poobah that year. And she's like, hey, I need somebody to take over the live art for this season because I used to do it. And I'm like, I'll do it. And then I'm like, what the hell did I just do?
Yeah.
And so I went from one thing to being involved in that.
Yeah.
And
at least that's seasonal. There's an end to it.
Yeah, right. And I didn't realize what I was getting into.
Yeah.
And, but it was an amazing experience. Like I really enjoy myself. I have fun. I reorganized a little bit, so it was a little bit more me, but it was still a blast. And we did it that year.
Yeah.
And then COVID hit.
Right.
And then
so the first year you did it, was that on the South Side?
The first year I did it, it was
the Miller.
No, it was at 31st Street Studios.
Oh, okay.
And then we did COVID, which was an online thing, which really wasn't that great, but we did what we could.
Yep.
And then the year after that, we did it at, I think it was 28th. It was on 28th or something in one of those big buildings there.
Right.
But
it was, that was the, I believe it's Miller or Coors, has a big facility over there, and either they were moved out of it and they weren't using it.
I think
that's what it was.
Yes.
But
it's
down there where all those distributions were.
Right. We're running out of warehouses, by the way. So if you've got a warehouse, All Night needs one.
It's just getting bigger, so.
Another year that was a blast. Yeah. And I really I had to actually I was just so exhausted because it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And I don't think that a lot of people realize how much work Art All Night is. It's physically demanding. It's emotionally demanding, especially day of. It's like we just do 24 to 36 hours.
Real quick, just
I'm going off on Art
All Night. No, you're exactly where I want you to be. So for someone that has never been to Art All Night, what is the experience for the consumer end?
Oh.
Just to describe so that people understand what it is.
Art All Night is a 24-hour expression of art. So there's no jury, there's no jury, there's no rules, there's
no judge.
No judgment. And so we have almost 900 painting or visual artists that come in and hand us a canvas and we hang it in this big warehouse.
And then there's
keep going.
Then you have, there's stuff for kids. There's a cardboard, fort area where people can build that kind of stuff.
It's one of the funnest things there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then there's live painting. Yeah.
Which I believe in term limits. So this is my last year of doing live painting. So I passed it off to somebody else for next year.
Got you.
I'm going to go do something different next year. I'm going to do something interactive.
Will you do the live painting or will you... will you still be an artist or?
Oh yeah. You can't. That's so much fun. there's and live painters understand this. There's something about painting when people are watching you.
Yeah.
That challenges you.
Mm-hmm.
It really does. It challenges you in a different way as an artist because you're somebody's watching me. Do this. I had somebody walk up to me this year and he's like, "Hey man, can I lay some paint on your piece?" Yeah. And I thought about it for a second and I'm like, yes, absolutely. Come around.
Yeah.
And he threw some red on it and then went away. I never saw, he's like, thanks. And gave me a fist bump and left.
Nice.
And I was like, that was pure Art All Night.
Give me some chills.
Yeah. That was pure Art All Night. And so Art All Night is a beautiful thing and we do it in 24 hours. So the manpower and the people power to make it happen within that shorter period of time.
Yeah, because the last drop-off is at what time?
10 a.m. in the morning.
10 a.m. is the last time that people can drop off art.
Right.
Okay, and then the doors open at
4 p.m.
4 p.m. So you have that amount of time to hang 900 pieces of art?
900 pieces of art, yeah.
Okay, and then there's installations.
There's music.
Right.
We've got to make sure that all the sound equipment comes up, all the stages are up. We've got to make sure that there's
two stages.
Two stages.
Two stages.
Yeah. And actually, we have three stages because we have performance.
God. Oh, right.
And
love it.
Last year, not this year, I'm like, we're not doing enough for performance arts.
Yeah.
And so I kind of forced the issue, and we had a kind of a mishmash of like folk and this year we actually had a performance, dedicated performance stage, which I'm so proud that we did
it.
But I came up with the idea, and usually you're supposed to own your ideas. I handed it off to somebody else. I'm like, hey, do you want to do this? And they figured it out.
You were already doing something else, so I think it might be acceptable.
But there, I mean, a lot of people do a lot of, you know, they wear a lot of hats, and it is really a lot of, like, I mean, not this year, but the year before, we swept 600 pounds of dust off the floor.
Wow.
In the warehouse.
Yeah.
600 pounds. The only reason we knew that was because we filled the bags and they had a scale.
That's crazy.
And we could measure the scale. So, yeah. So there's a lot of, long story short, we need help every year. So come out.
But it starts at 4 o'clock. It
starts at 4 o'clock.
And then what time does it end in the next day? 4 o'clock at night.
12 o'clock. And it ends with an auction of the live art that we did the night before.
Got you.
So all the live arts, all the proceeds from the live art go to Art All Night to help us pay for the next year, because it's an expensive endeavor.
Yeah.
And we do not prioritize sponsorships.
Gotcha.
So it doesn't matter if you're Pepsi or your Pittsburgh Print.
Yeah.
You get a little name on a whiteboard or a piece of cardboard equally.
Gotcha.
That is just like, hey, these are our supporters.
Yeah.
And nothing else. And that's a major part of it, because it's like, you know,
you don't want to have a brand on something.
Because then they can dictate.
Right.
We had a drum circle outside this year. Like, it was just, they just showed up.
Yeah.
And we have like bands like Timbalisa come in at 11 o'clock and just the place just explodes. Mm. And everybody's dancing and everybody's having a good time. And in my opinion, sorry, Pittsburgh, City of Pittsburgh, but like, it is a better time than the Arts Festival.
Got you.
And except for a couple of the acts that they bring in.
Right.
They're pretty hard to...
No, there's a time and place, I think.
Yeah.
And the Arts Festival, they kind of have a lane.
Yeah, they have a lane. They very much have a lane. Yeah.
And then, you know, Art All Night, I think that they...
I'm biased.
I'll let you be biased.
I'm biased. My heart is there. My heart is there.
But they're, you know, I think that there is a good reason to have both exist.
There's room for both. I'm not saying. I'm just like, the experience for me. Yes. The experience.
You'd rather be at one versus the other.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I understand.
So yeah, it's very much a free form. Thing.
So if you haven't been to, if you haven't been to both, check them both out. See which one you like better. But definitely come to Art All Night. It brings in, how many people do you think come by?
10,000.
10,000. Yeah.
10,000 plus.
In one, you know, from 4 p.m. to noon.
Yes.
It's amazing.
That's within within less than 24 hours. Yeah. So I was going to say that I've got a fact on how we know these things, but because you know how you can figure out how many people attend something?
No, tell me, please.
The Porta Johns.
I was thinking that, but I didn't want to say it.
Sorry, everybody.
They work for a certain amount of people. So when you clear them out, you know how many.
They weigh them. Yeah. So, and they've figured out over the years, like, general, like, how much.
Is that most events, like most festivals?
Yeah. I would say, unless they're taking tickets, which we don't take tickets. It's just you just come in.
Right.
So nobody's paying to come in. So we don't know exactly how many people attend.
So attendance is based off of weight.
Yeah.
Of something.
Yeah.
Of the Porta Johns. So that's very interesting. For people that are throwing free events, now they know how they can they can do that.
Figure out how many people came.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Very interesting.
Anyway.
So don't go off site. Don't divert yourself from the Porta John. You got to play into it so that it builds more.
You need to claim your space.
Yeah, exactly.
You need to claim your number.
I love that. That's a very interesting fact. I appreciate that. With all the things you've talked about, you know, doing web design, graphic design, and kind of building up. Now you're at a point where you have this art career, and starting from, you know, 2012 when you went to Art All Night and you sold the first piece. I don't need to know exactly how many pieces you've made or sold since then. Do you have a rough idea of like kind of the, like how did that escalate from there to here?
I mean, intent, really intent. It was, mm-hmm. it was, oh, hey, this is, it's always been from a young age. It was always like, hey, you know, I would love to be an artist. I would love to wake up in the morning and be and paint all day or, you know, have that lifestyle. And it slowly became attainable. Mm. It's still slowly becoming attainable.
Yeah.
I think that I saw a light at the end of the tunnel, and all of a sudden I'm like, okay, so how do I change this? How do I shift this into not only something that I really love to do, but something that other people love.
Yeah.
And you know what? Like COVID.
Yeah.
COVID really, like, I went from, hey, I'm selling work to like COVID happened, and all of a sudden I'm selling two out of three or more, like three out of five paintings.
Got you. I think that what, looking back on that and having to take, you know, the better part of a year to pause and not, you know, not go out, not do, it broke up the daily life, and it made us, whether, you know, people are glad that there was that gap, or there's people that, you know, think that it was all made up, but regardless of that, there's definitely, and it comes up a lot on the podcast, where there's a seam in time where that changed everything, and mostly for creative people, where they were able to, and it changed my business, absolutely, because we went from doing some art prints, and that had been something that we were kind of selling, to by the end of COVID, we had our own printers and do for the art printing, that had been something that we subbed out before, and the sign shops that we were using, they weren't cutting it for as far as quality goes. So we researched what the best fine art printers would be. We found this 12 color system where it has a solid red, solid blue, CMYK, double black, double gray. I know I'm nerding out on this, but it became.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, so the color gamut's super wide, and we were able to replicate very, very close to originals. So the printing is beautiful, very crisp, and like, whether it's illustrations from the computer or you know, fine art that's made, having this process. This. Thank you.
I can attest to this.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and we appreciate the work. And so now we have, you know, with COVID, I think because a lot of artists that would have been doing something else, it created a very simple way for people to make money while they weren't able to do their day to day. And it was for a big portion of the community, it was like, well, I've had this art that I could do on hold. I have all this art I've made. I wonder if I can sell it. Yeah. And then for us to be able to make prints where we can make prints on demand.
Yeah.
We don't have to make 1,000. We can make one at a time, and it doesn't cost us anything different. Our process, because it's on a roll and it's printing, you know, by the foot, it doesn't change whether we're doing one or 1,000. Our process doesn't change. So we could be 1,000 prints for 1,000 people, one of each, or it could be 1,000 of one print, and it doesn't change anything for us. So it makes it very scalable for a wide variety of people. And so people were able to put their stuff online, have it sold. We could either ship it straight to the customers, or, you know, we give them a print or a batch of prints, and they were able to, you know, kind of produce that. So it really, I think it gave a lot of people an opportunity to be able to produce an income still while they weren't able to go do a job where they would have normally been out with the public.
Yeah, right.
So it changed everything. So there's this like kind of like shameful, like, COVID was the, like, how I blossomed into this And I don't think it should be shameful. There's this you know, timestamp that changed everything.
It's gonna be. I'm interested to see. I would like to be like 100 years down the road, mm-hmm. and look back at like how COVID shifted everything.
Yeah, and there were waves, and there's gonna be things. I'm very interested to see these Canadian wildfires. A lot of our paper comes from Canada, and I'm curious in 2 years, that's probably how long it'll take before it hits the, even as a wholesale consumer,
right?
You know, if it changes the price of paper.
I mean, it's definitely going to...
It's going to be a part of it.
Yeah.
You know, and so depending on, and we have all these, you know, FSC certifications, which is responsible foresting.
Right.
And, you know, now are they going to change their guidelines? Do they have to loosen up a little bit so that they can get more paper produced without, you know, whatever. So there's lots of different, the way that I view things is I am enjoying watching economics as a whole, and I like understanding how all of it works together. It's all just one big machine, and everything is moving, and some things break, and then something else comes in and fixes it. So and every single person, every business, they're all playing a part, and whether they're trying to battle against each other or they're working together, there's a place for everyone. It's very fun to see from like a sitting back kind of point of view of like, ooh, I wonder how this will play out. So I love that.
It's going to be cool. I mean, I know that you know, the COVID thing is slowing down. Mm-hmm. I think that the economy has been, the economy has been up fluctuating and stuff like that. And even I think that just from like, quote unquote business analysts, they're like, mm-hmm. well, their people are spending less money on commodities and goods, and more money on like experiences and services mm-hmm. that they didn't get a chance to experience during COVID. And it's still affecting us regardless of whether we think it is or not. So
Right. So that was a jumping off point for you. You were able to kind of stay home, do this thing, promote yourself, and get a, you know, kind of build your name up?
Sure. I mean, it's definitely the one thing that I got. One, social media.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that at that point, like, we didn't even have a choice. Mm-hmm. You know, it was either social media or nothing.
Right.
And
you got DJs that are doing video, you know, trying to get stuff that way. There's like any form of entertainment from, you know, painting to, you know, concerts. I remember we had an episode where we were talking about people doing concerts at drive-in movie theaters.
Right, where you just like, drive up and watch. And it's
like, what can we do to get people out? People got very creative.
It forced me. I mean, I had an advantage because I've been in the media. I've been in media for so long, mm-hmm. as far as the internet goes. And I think that I was way behind the curve. I should have been taking advantage of it a long time ago.
I agree.
But I think that there was a point where I said to myself, or I didn't even say to myself, there was a point where it was before COVID hit, but I forget, I was watching something about Picasso, and they said that, you know, he painted 2 paintings a day. Mm. I'm like, 2 paintings a day, huh? That's a lot of paintings.
It can be.
I want that.
Yeah.
I want that. I still want that.
Yeah.
I'm an abstract artist. I work on 8 at one point I could have 8 canvases going at the same time. Mm. I do a lot of minimalist stuff, mm-hmm. which, yes, I encourage people that, you know, they joke with me and like, hey, you know, my kid could do that. I'm like, then your kid should do that.
Yeah.
Go for it.
That's the best response.
Or you can do it.
Yeah.
Go for it. Right. I love it.
Yeah. Because it's easy to get offended, like, but you don't see what I see. But it's like, all right, well, go. Yeah, please try.
Go for it.
Yeah.
I love it. You know, that's the expression is where it's at. And I used to get butthurt about it. And mm-hmm. then I changed my thinking. And so I don't. But like, for me, like, to me, like, doing minimalist work is like my most exciting work.
Yeah.
And you're like, but, and there's a thing that like I can do like a lot of color, and I do a bunch of that kind of stuff. But my minimalist stuff, where I did this one sunset, mm-hmm. and this person purchased it and he's like, hey, could you do me a favor and like write something about it for me? Because like, I think it's going to be in a presentation or something. Anyway, so it was a sunset and I'm like, so minimalism for me, I touched that piece besides the back, the general color of it. I painted it in orange. Mm-hmm. There's five touches to that. There's one right here. There's one right here. There's one right here. There's another little one right here. And there's one here. And that was it. Gotcha. And it's so freaking exciting. I get so excited.
So for something like that, do you sketch it out? Do you have an idea?
No, nothing. Okay. Nothing.
But you do the first one, and then you're like, all right, where do we go from here?
Right. Like, it's almost like I kind of, sometimes I have preconceived ideas, mm-hmm. or I might have seen a picture of a sunset. I mean, how can you not see pictures of sunsets?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
My interpretation of that and minimalism. I mean, I do ones that like my Let's Dance series is literally like I lay a color down and then I usually only use palette knives. That's one thing that I don't think people realize mm-hmm. is that I own very rarely do I use brushes besides doing a big body of color, and even then a lot of the times I'll just scrape the paint on just to do it, but like and then it's done but there's this energy accumulation before it happens, there's this physical motion that happens and it's really exciting to do
even the
combination of colors. I mean, I love bright, vibrant colors. Mm-hmm. So that definitely like affects me.
Yeah.
But the negative space and it creates, it's amazing to create the emotion with minimal amounts of description's not the right word. Minimal amounts of paint, but like I create the illusion with minimalism,
right,
and it's really fun. It's really exciting to do. Like, one of my artsy fartsy.
Yeah.
I love Daryl Kinsel. He's
Mr. You listened to that episode?
Yeah, I did. Good. And he's like Mr. Artsy. I'm just Mr. Artsy Fartsy. I'm doing this. So, Daryl, I heard you. but like one of my most minimalist artsy fartsy moments was I painted a canvas a light blue, like a baby, like a nice like light blue, and then I framed it in white and I said, this is finished. And I called it a bluebird sky mm-hmm. or a bluebird day. And if you're a skier and a snowboarder and you go out west, like do you know what a bluebird day is?
Yeah
You know what a bluebird day is?
Yeah,
so a bluebird day, for context, is a day when you can look up in the sky and you're out there snowboarding or skiing and you don't see any clouds and it's just a true blue.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, you could be sitting on this wall and just like kind of look out your window and that's what you see. And that was the idea for it. And the coolest part of that was that in my hallway, in my building, my neighbor was talking to her co-workers about it, and her co-workers contacted me and they're like, hey, she was talking about this piece, is this, what is this, what do you know yeah. and so they bought it for her.
Wow.
And I'm like, oh man, sorry about that.
Yeah
I'm just like, that just hit me, and I think that those moments really push me even harder. I mean, I average like 3 pieces a week,
okay,
like or more. And and so like I think that as I accumulated those positive reinforcements as far as those, it just encouraged me to do more and more.
I absolutely love that.
And so, I haven't looked back. Yeah. I really haven't looked back.
So something that I talked about on a previous episode was I had a friend that came to me and he was saying, my art's not selling. I know that, you know, my style isn't for everyone. He's like, I can paint that stuff. Should I just go to should I do it? I need to make money with this. Should I do it? And I said, no, if you, and me particularly, I might not love that art that he makes, but there, I'm like, if you love it, there will be people that love it, but people can see the passion. It's like, I worked at this call center, and I would tell people that people can hear your smile when you're talking.
Yeah.
And just that through the phone. But it's the same thing with the paint. People can tell when you're being authentic, and there's a organic feeling when they, you know, when they get that piece. And sure, you might be able to do some not commercial work. I mean, there's nothing necessarily wrong with doing that. But if you're just trying to do it, if you're trying to put down one area of your, you know, of something that you really want to be doing, and to change yourself so that you'll, for the sellability's sake, I think that you obviously have to be true to yourself. And people will see it, and I don't think that people will, you might be able to fool some people, but you won't be able to fool as many. Where if you do what you love, and then there's a reason you're doing it, and you have, and there might be, you know, one out of 1,000 people that like your thing, that's still, there's so many thousands of people. Well, it doesn't matter.
And that's, I have some thoughts on definitely on what you're talking about. It's like that person, so cliche in Pittsburgh, like I get requested to do bridge pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not going to lie, people, like, it's not my favorite thing to do. But I interpret the bridges the way I want to paint them. And so that person, you know, it's like, say they're into monsters and stuff like that, and like that's their jam, and it's not everybody's jam, but I tell you what, if you pop a little monster on that bridge or peeking up over it or just give the illusion that it might be sitting on the Pittsburgh, you know, one of the sister bridges or something like that, that could, but still stay true to yourself. Still stay true to what you're doing, because there are people that's what they do. They paint bridge pieces, and they're probably selling them, and I hope that they're happy doing what they're doing.
Sure.
And that's good for them.
Right.
Yeah. But if you're struggling, I also think that this is one of my mantras, is I only need one person to like that piece. One.
But you need to get it. You need to show it. You need to make sure they see it. So that's the hard part.
And I think that that's where a lot of artists struggle. I think that that's where a lot of our artists, this is a business. It's not, it's not just, I'm pouring my soul onto a canvas. It is.
And if it sits in the back of a studio for years, it's great that you made that piece, but if it doesn't get out there.
Right, it doesn't get out there. And that's where, like, I refined my social media. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, I know that it's intimidating. Like, I sit there every time I do a piece, and I sit in front of the camera and I go, hey, my name is Scott Kowalski. This is what I've done. Here it is. And I get a lot of comments like, wow, you're really brave to be able to do that and communicate that way. And I'm like, I think I'm on basic level. Like, you know, I look at other people out there, especially on the social media, and it's really hard to not be like, intimidated by the fact that the production level has gone from where it was to where it is. Right. And I'm even myself, like, you know, having a little bit of like, oh wow, I got to step up my game. And that's hard, because then it affects your prices. It affects your profits, because if you have to spend more time after the fact, after you're done painting, marketing.
It's a balance.
There's a balance, and you have to like, well, that makes my prices go up. A lot of people don't, like, I try to keep my prices pretty affordable.
You do.
And so that's important to me. But if I'm spending an hour or two afterwards, you know, doing production, getting it out on the internet, getting it on social media, and doing all that, that takes time, which means that, like, I'm earning less per piece because of the
product. And then we're going to be, you know, you got to do taxes at the end of the year. There's things that
taxes,
you know,
butter taxes.
I mean, if you had to account even a dollar per piece going into, you know, not just the taxes you're going to pay, but also the taxes that just in your time in doing it.
Right.
You have to pull value from that gets put into so many things. If you were to hire someone to do your social media, what would that cost?
Right.
If you were to hire someone to do whatever those things are, if you were to add all those things out, that's how you figure out how to scale, and then make sure that you're paying yourself for what those things would be if you were to hire people to do those, whether it's people working for you directly or outsourcing. It's amazing to see and put it in perspective, because then you realize why there's these people that do, when they're doing it professionally and they do need to charge a specific amount, which art can be a funny business because there's things that get blown up out of proportion and it's not really necessary. But I think that there is value in the promotion, the management, the and how you do all of those things is very important to understand. And the fact that if you're out, whether you're on social media or you're out and you have a booth, the people should, there should be some reverence. There should be, you made the art, you set up the booth, you're sitting here, sometimes it's not as exciting, but that people don't understand how much work it takes to get to that point. It's amazing.
Not only that, mm-hmm. not only that, but you might go and you don't sell anything, sure. nothing.
Yeah. I saw a meme the other day. It was like, it was really cool making $43. I spent $250 to be here.
Right, right. and I mean, I've had gallery shows that nobody's shown up to.
Yep.
I've had gallery shows that nobody's purchased one thing. I mean, mm-hmm. I just produced 28 pieces of artwork over the past 2 months,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't sell a thing. Mm. I didn't sell a thing. And that's a struggle.
It's not the gallery's fault. Like all they can do is try. You're doing the same thing. You're trying.
Yeah. And so we can go down a negative road here, but the reality of it is that it's in your soul.
Yeah.
It's a part of you. And even if you take one canvas and you paint it and you whitewash it and you paint it and you whitewash it and you paint it and you whitewash it, as long as you are getting the necessary therapy or mm-hmm. expression out of it and everything, then it's worth it. It's totally worth it.
Plot twist. We are the canvas.
We are the canvas.
That you're going to, wash and repeat and do it again. And okay. So I believe that, we're in the exact, it's not just that, like some people say like, oh, I see you're heading in the right direction or you're on your way. I don't believe that. I think that every moment is very purposefully, we're in the exact place that we're supposed to be at every moment. And whether that's hard times or good times, everything's in waves. There's ebbs and flows, yin and yang. There's a purpose for everything. And those bad shows, you have to have the down before it comes up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Or up before it comes down. Either way, it's always... always a wave. So it's very interesting to see and doing that, it builds perspective and then you can kind of hone in, you learn from it. All right, well, I don't want to have another show where I don't have anyone show up, or I don't want to have another show where I don't have anyone sell. And so then you reflect and you take time, and you might be hurt at first, but then you figure it out.
Right.
I've
had a show where I, quite recently, that I didn't sell a thing, you know, and it's very much, it's like, and I've quote unquote consider myself, being successful.
Yeah.
But it
also depends on what you measure the success, because you might not sell anything at that show, but then there might be people that remember that the purpose of the show might not necessarily have been to sell something there. Whether that was your purpose at that time or not,
right.
Meeting the right people, having people become interested, maybe they got inspired, maybe no one showed. It doesn't matter what happened. There's going to be a ripple effect later.
Yeah. And that ripple effect might not necessarily. It might actually come to me
mm-hmm.
through me.
No, it will absolutely.
Yeah. I'm going to do things differently, or I'm going to try something differently.
Right. Or yeah. sell prints.
Or sell prints. Yeah, sell prints.
And I'm going to, so, and you also measure it with, how do you measure your artwork?
Oh, my. Oh. So I measure my artwork or yeah. or price my artwork.
Well, which do the measurement like price. On TikTok? What do you, how do you you say this is my art? That's how big
banana,
it is.
The banana, the banana. I do the banana. Yeah, because I do. So I somebody's like, it's really hard to see like what size you are. If you say it's 12 by 16, to me that doesn't mean very much because yeah. I photograph on white walls, you know, just to give it kind of a clean look.
Right.
And if you saw the wall that I photographed it on, I'm giving secrets out. But like, it's really a mess. I have to go in with Photoshop and like clean it all up. And again, work that we're doing outside of just painting it. Yeah. But somebody's like, hey, that's really tough. So I went and I bought a plastic banana. And I put them on the top of my canvas to kind of give perspective on like how big and how large. And it's funny because I actually ended up painting the banana.
Yeah.
It came as just like this blah, like yellow. Yeah. And I'm like,
I think it should ripen as you go.
It's pretty ripe now. I'm like, I want to, if I was to pick a perfect banana right now, it's roughly.
Got you.
So if it gets too much, I might have to make a cake out of it. We're good to go.
So, but you'll say that, you know, this is three bananas long.
Three bananas long, four bananas high. you know, it's my way of not succumbing to some of the social media trends.
Yeah, I agree. I believe in that for sure. Because you can get lost in it. And it can be.
I'm sorry. Like there's.
I think you should have a few trends, maybe. Yeah, you know, yeah, every so often, kind of jump in. But but if it's all trends, then you start losing your personality. So you got to stay true to yourself.
Yeah, and you're not. And I'm also when I do my videos, like I'm speaking, like I'm talking.
Yeah, right.
And to me, like I think
that makes a difference.
It makes a difference to me.
Right.
You know, and if you're just copying an audio that somebody else is speaking and just.
There can be some comedic value sometimes. Yeah. There can be I'll do it from time to time, but there is definitely a tone that you set when you're doing your own talking for sure.
So yeah.
There's value in that.
That and you know what? Guess the audio that you just used. Mm-hmm. Three talks down or three Instagrams down, somebody else is using the same one.
Right.
So you just become a blur.
Right.
You become a blur. And again, it's we could go down the algorithm thing.
No.
And
so
it's definitely a tough.
It could eat you alive. And you don't, you know, it's people put a lot into it and they might not, you know, I think the organic, genuine, connection is what people are looking for, and on depending on which platform, some promote it more than others. Mm. But I think that's what people are looking for, and that's why the ones that are becoming more and more popular are gaining traction because they are more, you know, that's more visible of what it's not just like this is what it looks like in this second, and I photoshopped everything. When you have to make a video and you have to talk and use your own voice and you know,
communicate,
present something, communicate, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
then that changes everything, and you do it enough times, and I think that it comes across in a more organic way. The more that, you know, video is it's much harder to fake than just
absolutely
taking a pretty photo at the beach.
Yeah. Plus, I think that there's some people that are always looking for if you're always chasing that mm-hmm. That big like viral,
oh, yeah.
you could be chasing that forever. And mm-hmm. does that make does your art get better because of that,
right.
or are you just trying to make a more creative TikTok to gain more popularity?
Correct.
And I think that
and it's always the one that's not trying to get big that
yes.
get yeah. pumped.
My nephew killed me the one day. He's like, oh yeah, you know, I cut this two animes together and put it on TikTok and it got like a million views.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, I fucking bust my ass every day and you just put two animes together and slice it. And I'm like, well, how did you monetize that? What did you do? And he's like, nothing. I just got
did
the
it for
views.
Fun. But that's an experience that is going to be a ripple later for him.
Yes.
So he'll figure that out.
Yes.
And it rippled for you because now you're got you thinking about it.
It did. And then the people listening. It did. It also checked myself. Checked myself because it was like, initially I was really butthurt about it. And then I'm like, nah, don't be butthurt about it. That's not cool.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that's a part of our growth.
Yeah.
You know, and it is challenging out there because it's hard to, it's hard to, but I love Instagram. Like, I think I get to follow artists from Iran. I get to follow artists from Argentina. I get to follow artists from, and be influenced by them.
Right.
And, you know, I specifically, like, this one artist in Iran, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but, like, he used this color combination and, like, the red and the gold, and I'm like, I really like that. I think that would be sharp to do this, and this with it. And I didn't replicate his work, but I used similar colors in the piece that I did. Yeah. And I was freaking amazing. So like, there are some real positives to the technology. Definitely, like, I would be lost without an Instagram. I just really thoroughly enjoy seeing all the artists do it.
Yeah.
You know, I know, you know, we're grumbling a little bit about the other stuff.
I don't
but
think
like,
so.
You know, it's definitely, it's fun to see people's interpretations. It's amazing to be able to see an artist that I would never get a chance to see.
Absolutely.
And it changed the game too, because before, where was the only place that you could go to sell your work?
Right. You had to go to a gallery.
And that's the barrier to entry on there is like huge.
Right.
You know, you there's only so many months in a year, and there's only so many weekends in a year that you can present your work.
Yep.
And so that means that if you were doing a new artist once a week, which that didn't happen that way,
right?
At the most, you could do 52 artists,
right?
Which is
so you got to pick wisely.
Yeah, and then put all your
from
eggs
their
in one.
Yeah,
and put all your eggs are in one basket.
Right.
So that's crazy.
Right,
too.
And if you have a rent you got to pay every month for your gallery, then you're going to choose people that you know are going to pay your rent. If you're making 20-30%, and so you're like, all right, well, I need, you know, plus if you're trying to make a living with it, then we got to get at least $6,000, you know, or whatever that is,
let's do a modest living,
you know?
In Pittsburgh.
Right.
If you're making $30,000 or $40,000, you're at the,
but the rent might be $2,000,
$1,000.
Yeah, who knows what it is, but
yeah. So, I mean, that is a challenge in itself.
And then you, as the gallery, you got to promote it. You got to do this. You got to do that.
Right.
There's necessities.
Yeah.
And then depending on who you are and what you're doing, there's more to it than just, oh, this guy made $6,000. That's never the case.
It's never the case.
Right.
The other thing that I definitely like is, I'm not in the business of storing art.
Mm.
That's one of my things that I'm like, if it is 3 years old and it hasn't gone anywhere, bye.
Yeah. Do you paint over it?
I paint over it.
Okay.
I whitewash it and paint over it. Yeah. I believe in that pretty heavily, because I've seen like pieces of artwork that are like, people are still trying to sell it, and they're like 10, 15 years old.
Mm.
And again, I'm not knocking those people. They're doing their thing and they believe in what they believe. But for me personally, it's like, if it hasn't moved in 3 years, it's not going to move.
Gotcha.
And move on.
Yeah.
Cause I'm a different person than I was three years ago. It might've been a cool piece back then, but like,
interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Tell me about canvas stretching.
Canvas stretching. Oh, so I do stretch my own canvas. Josh took a class.
I did.
Down at the Redfish Bull.
It's fun.
Shout out to Chris.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So I stretch my own canvas. And so if you're an artist and you're out there listening, stretch your own canvas. Do it yourself.
And Scott is going to have a class that you can buy up on his website soon.
Yes.
So you can check that out probably by the time this comes out or shortly after.
I will make sure something's up there that you can purchase to learn how to do this.
Yeah.
So the advantages. One, if you want to earn more money per canvas, per piece, what is the easiest way to reduce your cost? Materials. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't, if you're at a level where you're just like, I'm going to have the most I'm the most silkiest canvas, and if you're at that level, this might not be the most, but you know, if you're starting out, or if you're trying to go through the slog, it's an easy way to earn more money per piece. Mm-hmm. And so basically I stretch my own canvas. I cut custom sizes, so I'm not at the mercy of 16 by 20.
Yeah. Right.
I can do a 2-inch by 20 inches. I can do a 15 by, you know, whatever, 40. I can be really creative with the size of canvas, because there's a lot of people that are like, hey, I have a wall, and okay, well, put about a foot of space around the piece, and then give me those dimensions, and I'll do a commission for you at exactly the right size for that piece, that part of the wall.
Got you.
So it's a very cool way to do it. Plus, yeah. Honestly, I like the deeper size. I do the 1.5 inch. It ends up being 1.5 inches deep. Mm-hmm. That's museum quality as far as, or it's museum style. Is it museum style or whatever?
Go for that. It's fine.
Sure. and I think that it also adds to my process, because I think that when I build my own canvas, when you build your own canvas, it adds to it takes a little piece of your soul with it to it.
I agree. Gives I agree 100%.
Gives a little bit of energy towards the intent of what you're doing.
Right.
And instead of pulling a piece off of, like, out of Michael's and then ripping the plastic off and here it is. You've already started your journey with this piece before you've even, like, laid paint down on it or
yes.
anything.
Yes.
You're touching the canvas, you're cutting the wood, you're doing all these things, and they can be done in a small apartment. You don't yes. need to do it. You don't have to have crazy tools.
And I think we priced out a 16 by 20 with some basic materials. What was about that cost?
For the one that I made? It was like under $10.
Under $10.
Yeah.
And then if you're doing it consistently, you can probably get to the point where you're doing it for about 10 minutes a piece.
Yeah. If once you get the hang of it.
Yeah.
And the other thing,
I did it the first time, and I think, you know, this should go. Obviously, you might need to try it a few times, whatever. But once I did it the first time, and I have had some experience trying to stretch canvases, but I did not do nearly as good of a job once I had some more instruction. And it was it just all kind of clicked, and I was like, well, now I can do this forever, and this is a great skill to have. So
it is. And the other thing too, the biggest advantage, you can go get small canvases and it would be hard to compete as far as the pricing there, because Michael's, you know, they throw those 3-packs or 6-packs and
right.
stuff, but it gives you the opportunity to do large work inexpensively. Mm. Like I can do a 4-foot by 4-foot canvas for under $20-$25.
Yeah.
Roughly, somewhere around there.
And what would that be for a 1.5 inch deep at like Michael's or Joann's?
Oh, like $200 or $300.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there. Unless you're like, there's the massive sale
sure.
and
whatever.
You're doing it. But still, to just go straight up and
even at half off.
Yeah, even at half off.
You're not even coming close.
You're not even coming close. And you can go further than that. You can go 4x8, and you're still, that price point stays roughly the same.
Right.
You might add a couple more materials, but you're still under $50. 4-foot by 8-foot canvas is
yeah, and that you'd have to attainable. Go. To, you'd have to go to a gallery. You'd have to go to someone like a professional framer,
no.
and then they're going to be charging you,
oh my goodness,
$600-$800 at least.
Right. Yeah.
At least.
Or you could call me and
yeah.
I can make them for you
exactly.
for a marginal fee.
Exactly. I love it. So where can people find you?
Oh, scottkowalski.com. I'm on the Instagrams. Mm-hmm. I'm on the TikToks. I'm on the Facebooks. I'm on YouTube.
Nice. Spell your name for me.
KOWALSKI.
Love it.
And Scott is SCOTT.
Perfect.
Yeah. .com.
Awesome.
Yeah. I have an e-commerce site on my website is an e-commerce site, so you
cool.
can literally just go there and what you see that's available on the homepage,
mm-hmm.
you can purchase directly. It calculates the shipping for you, and I ship all over the world.
Yeah.
I'd love to send some stuff to Europe. That would be rad.
Yeah.
That would be.
Chime in. Leave a comment. go on the website and we're talking to Europe right now.
Yeah,
go Europe, check us out.
Come on over.
Tag someone from Europe if they're an art collector.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, thank please you. Do it. And so with that, thank you so much for listening. This has been Thoughtful Discussions with Josh Snyder. My social media, obviously Thoughtful Discussions, but how to find me and kind of branch out everywhere from there would just be my Instagram is the best place. And that's Josh Snyder 86. And that's Snyder with an I, S-N-I-D-E-R. And from there, you'll find PGH Printship, which is my business. We do printing for over 7,000 customers. We do fine art. We have our little copy center that has a variety of products. We have like a kind of like a sign shop as well. It's just my fiance and I. We do all of the work. We do about 75 orders a day. It's insane and amazing at the same time. It's fun, but we're doing the work that we really like doing, so we're very happy and fortunate that we are able to do it. I've been building this business for about 9 years, and I've been an entrepreneur for 15. So, and the podcast has been going since 2018. So we've been doing that for about 5 years. And we're about to hit our 100th episode. So Appreciate everyone that's listening. You could also check out PittsburghMuseums.org. That's also on my profile. I'm a volunteer board member for that, which is media organization, kind of like a magazine, where the subject is museums, and they discuss and have a directory of like over 80 museums in the Pittsburgh area, which a lot of people don't know that there's that many.
There's a lot.
It is. It's really cool. It's fun to be a part of. So definitely check that out and check out Scott and his stuff at
scottkowalski.com.
Perfect. Love it. Thank you so much for listening. Go out there and I'm going to use Corey's word. Go out there and do something beautiful in the world. And we appreciate you. We wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be able to be doing this without people listening and ordering from us, buying from us. The community is important, and I can't express how thankful I am that we have people that believe in us and we're able to do what we're
doing.
So
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pittsburgh community. Shout out to Pittsburgh community. Absolutely. Because we can't do it without you. So.
We love it. So.